all owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is Ben Bueller Garcia. If you have a pulse, you're probably aware of what's been happening in Afghanistan. As you can imagine, there's been a great deal of feedback and opinions expressed by those who served in country and have previously been guests on American Warrior Radio. One of my previous guests sent me a terse and to-the-point message. There's a book about the last special forces fighting the forever war in Afghanistan. You need to read it. We contacted the author. Her publisher was kind enough to overnight the book to us. They say that history repeats itself. Sometimes it repeats itself so quickly that one almost feels they're having a deja vu moment. That's the way I felt when I read Eagle Down, and we're very pleased to have the author, Jessica Donati, joining us on American Warrior Radio today. But first, what has happened in Afghanistan has created ripples that I believe we'll be feeling for a very long time. However, for some, the impacts are more immediate and personal. By now, you've probably seen the news about the Pineapple Express, the initiative put together by former special operators to rescue their former allies. They did so of their own accord, with their own money, and operating outside government channels. By most accounts, they got 630 persons out. Jessica Stone is a Washington-based news anchor and correspondent. She's part of a group of 50 professionals involved with the Afghanistan Transit Initiative, working to get at-risk Afghans to safer locations so they can be evacuated. Jessica won, just to keep me and my producer's head from exploding. Jessica Stone Evans, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, Jessica, we've got two journalists here on the show, so let me try and get down to the basics. What, why, where, and how? Tell us about your initiative.
Our initiative is to move initially a group of about 375 vulnerable minority and women Afghans out of Kabul and into third-party countries so they can await asylum or refugee status elsewhere or continue the process to get the SIV, which is the special immigrant visa that the Canadians and the Americans and other countries are awarding. But as we know from General Austin's statements earlier this week, nobody with that description got out. And so that's really the purpose of our initiative. We're one of many, but we are coordinating with all of the other groups of this kind, including the Pineapple Express. This is and should have been the job of the American military and the American diplomatic corps, and it is now a side hustle and a side job for some of the same people who are serving us in our diplomatic and our aid and humanitarian corps of their own accord because they care too much to leave these people behind.
Now, Jessica, the group, we mentioned 50, your professionals in your group with 50 years collective experience in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Somalia, other non-permissive environments. What you are a journalist, what are the other folks involved?
Most of them are workers for humanitarian groups or NGOs, non-government organizations, or they are still working for the government, but not in this capacity. I'm one of the rare journalists who has a personal connection. I'm sure Jessica Ladati has a lot of them as well. With my fixer, I'm still trying to get him and his three small children out. He has really good paperwork, and I'm really still surprised, though I shouldn't be, that he's still not out because his paperwork's been in process since 2014, and he's still not out, and he has pictures with ambassadors and all the rest. So he's in a very fortunate position on the paperwork side, but on the personal side, we are just keeping him in a very low-profile location awaiting extrication, and it's yeoman's effort. This is a women-led initiative. I am so impressed with these ladies. They already got people moved quickly and safely via ground transport and are able to basically secure these folks with private dollars and donations and their own credit cards until we get those private donations, until these people can be brought to safety. They're really, really heroes. It's a privilege to be among them.
This is an intriguing time, I believe, for all of us, Jessica, but I have to say that as an immigrant myself, I think that the silver lining of this is it speaks to the generosity and the good-heartedness of the American people. Your group has raised over, it looks like about 1.25 million of your goal of 8 million to get 1,000 people out in, what, just a matter of weeks?
We've raised that in just a few days, and we're still taking small donations. You can go to our partner website at cavwv.org. That's the Coalition for Allied Vietnam War Veterans, cavwv.org. And we'd love to have you help us out. We are continuing to work alongside all of these other groups, coordinating and making sure that we're working together, because we know there are a lot of organizations out there doing this. But again, this should have been, I think we all feel strongly, this should have been the work that was done based on the promise we made to these loyal folks. And I would just add one more thing. If you are in a community receiving these folks, prepare yourself for the differences. There are a lot of differences, but these folks are so excited and grateful and humbled to become American, Canadian, French, British citizens, and they have served the cause and our cause as a coalition loyally and faithfully. So please give them a hearty welcome.
Jessica Donati, if you don't mind joining the conversation here, I know both of you, both Jessicas, you've been in country extensively. Jessica 1, you were embedded with the 10th Mountain, and Jessica 2, this is, my head's going to explode. Please be patient. But Jessica Donati, what is your, now, you, the Wall Street Journal, you got all your folks out, as I understand it, but you had to pay some mercenaries to do it? I mean...
So the Wall Street Journal partnered with the other main newspapers that were the only ones that had kept presence in Afghanistan throughout the war when everybody else left. That's the New York Times and the Washington Post as well, all got together and chartered basically a plane to evacuate our staff in multiple flights, because there were many of them. And most of them are now safely in Ukraine, and some of them have moved onwards to Mexico.
I'm sorry, to Mexico?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of hard to imagine Afghan family from Kandahar showing up in Mexico with no knowledge of Spanish or the local culture. But Mexico has been very generous with visas. And so my understanding is that they've given a number of Afghan journalists and their families an opportunity to start a new life there.
Jessica, one, what, as I understand it, your initiative now is basically just to get them to a safe place, almost like putting a plane in a holding pattern, waiting to land. And really, is the idea just to get them the heck out of Afghanistan and we'll figure out the rest a little bit later?
Well, I wish that we could do it that way, because that in some ways sounds simpler. But unfortunately, the bureaucracy of getting these folks to another country requires us to have services on the ground for them that can help them process their paperwork and also just food, water, shelter. We can't just drop them off in the middle of nowhere. The countries that are receiving them have to have acceptance paperwork from the United States or other countries who are their ultimate destinations. And the State Department is essentially in the position of having to sign off on each one of these flights, which is part of the paperwork nightmare that we are descending into. So we'd love it if that happened quicker.
Well, you know, I guess in an ideal situation, the Taliban suddenly becomes nice guys and they open the airport and they allow commercial flights. But both of you have experience in that country. I'm guessing that's not something we'd want to place any bets on.
I mean, I think that the Taliban are really keen to project a different image of themselves, to make themselves more acceptable. They want to have relationships with other governments and access to financial resources. But I mean, the thing is, if you ask any Afghan what they think about the Taliban, no Afghan really believes that the Taliban have changed. So I think you have to balance the two things. Many of the Afghans who've been left behind are very afraid of what will happen when the Taliban finally establish a government.
Agreed. That would be my guess, too. Jessica Stone, thank you so much. I know it was very last minute. Thanks for joining us here on American Warrior Radio.
Great pleasure.
Give us that website again, please.
CAVWV.org, CAVWV.org. So that's the Coalition of Allied Vietnam War Veterans, the acronym there, .org. Thanks again for having me.
My pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, we can all help. Even a little bit helps, and I suspect this won't be the last time we'll be hearing this story, but please look into it, into the Afghanistan Transit Initiative, and help if you can. We'll be back with more from Jessica, too, Jessica Donati, and her prescient book, Eagle Down. Stick around.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call, your presence, your words, your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no-cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF Colorado Springs.
Life is full of bittersweet transitions. It's difficult to know how these changes will impact us over time. For some people, difficult transitions like retirement, divorce, or loss of a loved one can hit harder than expected and may contribute to feelings of hopelessness or even thoughts of suicide. The risk of suicide is even higher for men over 50 who served our country. Guys like me. That's why support from friends and family makes such a big difference. Every day, your actions could help save a life. Together, we got this. Learn how you can help save a life at veteranscrisisline.net.
We're building a radio station that is unique and different.
I like the news. I like being informed.
Stay with us at 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM KPPF. And hear the power of information.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're now going... It's been an interesting day to the two Jessicas. Jessica Donati is she covers foreign affairs at the Wall Street Journal in Washington, D.C. She joined the paper as bureau chief in Kabul in 2015 and lived in Afghanistan for over 4 years. Prior to the Journal, she worked for Reuters in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, covering both the conflicts in Libya and Afghanistan. She co-authored a piece on the war in Libya that was chosen as a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 22. Jessica, Sebastian Junger gave quite a bit of praise to your book, Eagle Down, which I believe him to be one of the greatest writers of our generation. What was your motivation to write these stories and to get them published, and why now?
Well, I was in Afghanistan for 4 years, and during that time as a journalist, I found it very frustrating to see that the messaging that the U.S. government was sending out did not match the conditions that we were seeing on the ground. The narrative that started with the Obama administration was that the U.S. is no longer at war, that it's a training mission, and that soldiers were no longer in combat. Whereas what we saw from 2015 on, as soon as the majority of troops left, the Taliban resurged, and within a few months, they captured their first city, which was the city of Kunduz. In order to recapture that city, the U.S. sent in a bunch of American special forces and led a two-week-long mission to recapture the city. But this was never explained to the public. They continued to say, no, the Afghans did it. And to me, it was risky to deny the role that the U.S. had, because it gave a false sense of how well the Afghan government was doing. And that on one hand. The other hand also was that it didn't seem fair to the soldiers who were still fighting and dying on the front lines.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's, you know, it's interesting. I've got a guest coming up who's a Marine, a combat veteran that was in Afghanistan. And in his book, he talks about how the combat action ribbon is something that, you know, there's a real sense of pride wearing that on his uniform or any Marine's uniform. But then there's the question of, well, what qualifies you for a combat action ribbon? And Jessica, I'm just a knucklehead. I don't know much. But, I mean, to me, if you're anywhere and somebody's shooting at you, that's... that's combat. And
well, that's exactly what you'll see, or what you will have seen in the book, is that these soldiers are ordered to go into Kunduz City and recapture it from the Taliban, or go into Ghazni City and recapture it, or go on this mission with commanders in the middle of Taliban-controlled Helmand and try and capture or kill this commander. So they were being sent into exactly the same combat situations that they had always been fighting. But what had changed was the narrative in Washington, where they were saying, these aren't combat missions, these are training missions. And they stopped calling the soldiers soldiers or whatever. They started calling them advisors, which sounds less warlike. And it was because the Obama administration had promised to end the war, and they wanted to make it look like they had.
You, Jessica, you're a journalist. You know the importance of semantics. Is that the game we were playing?
That's the game that we were playing, and that's the cost that you see now, where the government, to a certain extent, believed its own narrative and wildly misjudged the amount of time that the Afghan government would be able to stand on its own. Because for years, the U.S. has been telling the public the Afghans are in the lead, U.S. is just training, a little bit of advising, but they were really understating the critical role that U.S. special operations in particular and air support had in keeping the country together. The moment that was removed, the country collapsed, and that's why you saw the chaos that happened in August with the government falling before the U.S. had even left.
And, you know, in the introduction, Jessica, when I talked about the deja vu moment, your Eagle Down was released in January. I don't do math in public, but we're now... what, you know, 8 months down the road, and it's Groundhog Day. And I just, well, you I caught a February 21st interview you did where you stated pretty much unequivocally that the Afghan government would not have been able to control these areas without the U.S. support. And that's pretty prophetic. We just saw it happen all over again.
Right. I mean, to me, what was the real blow, I guess, was when the Taliban retook Kunduz for the third time in early August. And that was the start of their lightning 8-day offensive, which led to them taking over the entire country. And it was just exactly the same as it had been every time. They build up on the outskirts of the city, and then basically the government force gets scared away, or they make deals and they flee and turned over the city. And when Kunduz fell, I thought, if the U.S. doesn't intervene, then this is really going to be the end. And sure enough, one city after the other, they all were given up with almost without a shot fired.
Jessica, let's just point a clarification here for our listeners and the lawyers. Clearly, I never served in the military, which is why I do what you do, what I do with American Warrior Radio. You are actually a journalist, right? You're not some kind of super secret CIA ninja.
No, I'm not. I'm not in the government. Never have been. I'm not even, as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not even American. I'm just somebody who ended up in Afghanistan by accident for the first time in 2012, and then just ended up covering the war for a long time and beginning to feel. I think sorry would be one way to say it, but maybe it's not the right word. For all the people who were giving their lives and suffering for a war that was being really badly managed.
You know, I learned something new on every show, Jessica. I would have guessed you were from Texas with that accent, but thanks
right.
for correcting. So so from our perspectives, from the outsiders with expertise, but not necessarily military, let's talk. Lately in the United States, you hear people talk about the distinction in the United States between the philosophies of citizens in, say, urban environments versus rural communities, the East and West Coast versus the heartland. But there's still certain commonalities that still bind us. But tell us about the disparities in Afghanistan that you witnessed. I mean, you've got the real tribal culture, you have urban dwellers versus the remote villages. Is this... from the very beginning, Jessica, in your opinion, was this like trying to repair a shattered vase when all the broken pieces will never fit together?
I mean, I think it depends depends what the objective was. I mean, in Afghanistan, when you look at, say, photos of the 60s or 70s, which constantly seem to resurface on Twitter showing women in miniskirts, you know, that was Kabul, maybe, and the urban areas, whereas in rural parts, especially in the south and the east, which are also typically the Taliban, or typically were the Taliban strongholds, life for women didn't really change that much during the entire time that the U.S. was there, because the Taliban's harsh rule was part of the culture. That's just the way that that people lived around there. And so that was an important thing to take into account when then deciding you're going to rebuild the Afghan state in your image. And it was never going to work the same way that if, you know, Saudi Arabia came to the U.S. and said, okay, we're going to decide how you guys conduct your life. That wouldn't work either.
Mm-hmm. No, you're spot on. I tell you, if I could be king for a day, I would require that every young person in the United States travel overseas for at least a year or two to be able to appreciate how good we have it here. And
yeah.
And I guess maybe in Britain, I think that's maybe sort of a regular thing too. But the idea of the cultural differences and not recognizing that, one thing I've often heard, and my brother served, and he told me two things. One is, A, in that culture, the one thing that they really understand and respect, frankly, is the iron fist. It's force. And that has to be the beginning of every negotiation. But also I've heard other people say that, you know, the Afghans, over their history, at least recent history, they have a tendency to just defect and switch sides. And, you know, they're just looking after number one, which I guess I can't fault them for doing that. But is that something you witnessed as well in your time over there?
I mean, I felt, I developed a lot of really close friendships with a number of Afghans there, especially the journalists that I worked with and whose life basically were in their hands when we would go out on reporting trips, when we'd be embedding with Afghan soldiers. I mean, I was entirely dependent on my colleagues to keep me safe. And so I think that is more of like a global description of how, I mean, for a country that is very poor, low income, when you have the U.S. coming in and saying, hey, we're going to give you billions of dollars to do this and do that. I mean, what country is going to say, no, we won't take it, especially when the U.S. came in at the end of the 1990s, because the Taliban had been so isolated. The country was very, very poor at that time.
That's okay. Well, that's why we have experts like you on to read that. Ladies and gentlemen, Jessica Donati, you can learn more, jessicadonati.com. Great book, Eagle Down. There was one of the Green Beret soldiers in the book, Josh Thiels, and when asked, his comment was, you know, what would you do, Josh? His comment was, instead of buying bombs for airstrikes, spend the money on paying off local leaders and strongmen. Everyone has a price, and the United States could afford to buy off Afghanistan. We'll be right back, folks.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
Didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue, and it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call, your presence, your words, your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
Opportunities present themselves every day. Opportunities that move us forward. Opportunities to serve part-time in your community while continuing their full-time careers or education to help keep our nation safe at home and around the globe. Explore your opportunities in the Air Force Reserve.
Powerful talk.
I like to talk about one thing that may be difficult about deployments, breaking the news to kids.
Powerful talk.
So, what is stress? How does stress affect us?
powerful talk.
I think it's really important for us to ensure that the whole story is told and understand, you know, everyone's place in that historical context.
Knowledge is power. Get yours on KPPF.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're speaking with Jessica Donati. You can learn more, Jessica, two S's, Donati.com. She's got an amazing book that came out in January called Eagle Down. Jessica, in Eagle Down, you describe in great detail many of the missions these Green Berets undertook, pieced together from in-person interviews. They're heroic and they're heartbreaking. And you know, one of the things I took from the book is we all love to watch the movies, but they don't really do a very good job of fully portraying the fact that these operators are not robots. They're human beings with families and feelings. And that's one thing I really appreciated from your book, that just comes out, if you'll pardon the phrase, it bleeds out of the pages.
But that's what I really wanted to convey, because often what you would hear when you would confront people in Washington about the policy, the view was that, well, it's just 20 or so special operators who die each year, and that this is a relatively low cost to keep Afghanistan from collapsing. Whereas I wanted to show exactly what it meant, even if you're taking one life, you know, how the families have impacted, the burden that their fellow soldiers carry for the rest of time, and the injustice of dying in an operation or a mission that was unnecessary.
Yeah. And I tell you, there was early on in the book, very early on in the book, Jessica, the hair went up on the back of my neck because a name popped up. The name is Caleb Brewer. Kind of a shock. I've met Caleb and his family. And I thought, I knew he served, but that's about all I knew. And then going through the book and learning more about his situation, maybe because it suddenly became very personal for me. But anyway, congratulations. I believe that you really communicated those messages. And one of the other themes that comes out and makes me as a civilian shake my head is just the ridiculousness in some cases of this. And, you know, Kunduz is if I pronounce that correctly, is a perfect example that first time. And a lesson we should have learned in May back in Kunduz the first time was the Afghans wouldn't go back in without the Green Berets, right?
Right. This is exactly why the country didn't last for long without U.S. support, because, you know, the Afghan commanders are great fighters. They're super brave. They're super smart, super well trained. I've embedded with Afghan commanders a few times, and they're really impressive people. But if their leadership can't bring them air support, can't get their paychecks on time, can't get them vehicles, there's not a lot that these guys can do. They're totally dependent on the Americans to keep them alive. And at a certain point, they're not all just going to go on a suicide mission when they don't have the support of the rest of the army. And, you know, to go back to Caleb's story, I mean, for me, one of the most shocking things about his story was how he describes what happened to him in hospital after his injury in Helmand, where while he's recovering from becoming a double amputee, the hospital staff are telling him that he needs to shave his beard because it's not in line with regulations. Yeah. You know, to me, that kind of cold-heartedness after, at that point, 15 years of war, to me, was just shocking.
Did you also, you know, stories like that, Jessica, I almost get sort of a Catch-22 vibe, you know, the novel coming out of this, because it's almost hard to believe, but you were there, you witnessed it in some cases, you heard it firsthand, and it just and the other thing I which really struck me, because I've tried, we try and get as many World War II Korean era veterans on, and we talk about the difference between their experience coming home, and particularly that period from when they were in Germany to when they got back to Kansas or Florida. And nowadays, I think one of the things that the brains of these brave military personnel have to deal with is this war is being live streamed, and one of the pieces that really touched me when you're talking about Hutch and the fact his wife Tina, I mean, she sees him on TV, I mean, she knew he was there. She didn't know what he was doing. Probably appropriate, given he's a Green Beret. But, mm-hmm. you know, hey, mommy, daddy's on TV. How do you deal with that?
I know. That was another shocking moment when there's some wire news agency was carrying a photo of Hutch in a meeting with an Afghan police chief in Kunduz the morning after it had fallen. And what is going on in this actual photo is they've fought their way in, the Americans, overnight, basically because they were so poorly equipped, even on the American side, because they had pulled back so much. Some of the guys are going into Taliban-controlled Kunduz City on basically motorbikes. Because there weren't enough armored vehicles to go around. And so they had the fight of their lives the night before. And this Afghan commander flies in and he says, yes, we're going to send reinforcements. And then they leave. And then within a couple of hours, they're under attack again from all sides. But for Tina, it was, I think, a shock and a relief because she hadn't heard from him since they had left on this mission. And so she was becoming worried. And so when the kids saw him on TV, I think for her it was, well, at least he's alive. And the other thing, of course, that the family had to go through further on was when the hospital was bombed and all of these speculations are floating around in the media about war crimes and how it could have happened. You know, for her to keep a straight head and keep the family going, she was also pregnant at the time, you know, it was very, very difficult.
And that's something else that I think people don't get. I know people don't get is, you know, there's the phrase, the fog of war exists for a reason. And that inadvertent airstrike on that hospital in Kunduz, that really created, in many ways, in my opinion, Jessica, the situation that complicated matters on down the road, where it's almost like our air support assets became very gun shy on future missions.
They did for a time, and that's one of the reasons why later on in the book, in the mission in Marja, the Green Berets are stranded in this village where they've gone to try and capture a Taliban commander, and the helicopter that arrived to evacuate one of their soldiers crashes, and then they're under fire from all sides, and they can't get any air support, and this eventually leads to one of their teammates being killed because they try and clear the buildings around them on foot. And, you know, another life lost because of a problem with the policy.
And to clarify, air support was available, and in the AOR, they just were not allowed to engage, or they couldn't get the authority to engage.
They were not allowed to because at that point, because of what had happened with the hospital, they had very strict rules on when they could fire. And the people giving air support had to have eyes on somebody with a weapon, which, of course, they didn't have when the people firing at them were taking cover inside the buildings around their little base.
Coming back to the Catch-22 reference, you know, another one that, and I don't know if it was, well, which battle it was, but basically they had gotten approval finally to drop some missiles on this structure, and then for some reason or another, I forgive me, they couldn't do it, so the Green Beret's like, well, I've got demolitions on me, I'm just going to go over there and blow the building up. And then the higher-up said, well, no, you don't have authority to blow up structures. Wait a minute, you just said I could drop a couple missiles on it, but I can't walk over there and lay charges?
That was the shack where Caleb had stepped on the IED, and they wanted to destroy it because they didn't want to give the Taliban any information operation win. And so they wanted to destroy everything that was left in the shack. And they had the permission to drop a bomb on it, but they weren't allowed to blow it up. And any kind of error of destruction of a heart of a structure had to be signed off pretty much at the top level in Kabul, which could take a very, very long time.
And just to be clear, we're talking 1, 2, 3 administrations here, and the rules of engagement, which were just completely ludicrous. I mean, I don't know anybody who's ever handled a gun that would accept the fact that, well, you can't shoot until they shoot at you first. that ends up for a lot of not very good days. But eventually things were loosened up a little bit, and the the chains were taken off somewhat towards the end of this experience, Jessica?
Right. There's a constant sort of up and down of these rules where the Trump administration came in, and then they decided eventually that they were going to increase pressure on the Taliban to force them to the table. And so between that and just generally the way that the Trump administration didn't want to micromanage the battlefield, there was a lot more air support in the field. And then obviously that again turned back after they had signed the deal with the Taliban. The U.S. again pulled back on providing air support, which was frustrating to the soldiers who were still there because they often couldn't support their Afghans who might be getting slaughtered somewhere, but they weren't allowed to go and support them.
You know, I reading your book, I thought of an experience, Jessica. I did several ride-alongs with the local police department, and one night we kept getting calls to, a bad guy with a knife at my front door. And very often we'd get there, and there may not even be a bad guy, much less a bad guy with a knife. And I turned to the police officer and said, you know, do you think that maybe the civilians out there have figured out that unless there's an imminent threat of bodily harm, that you don't have the resource to respond in time? So everything that happens is a guy with a knife or a gun. And he wouldn't answer the question, but just the fact that he wouldn't answer. And I was thinking about some of these Green Berets. It's almost like if it was me, we're getting shot at, not our Afghan allies. All of us are getting shot at. Bring in the hellfire, but that's just me. What do I know? I'm just doing a podcast out of my parents' basement. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Jessica Donati. She's got a great book out called Eagle Down. You can learn more at jessicadonati.com. Listen, you've heard me talk about how excited I am about my new American Warrior Radio Challenge coins from Boss Custom Coins. The process was easy. I chose the basic parameters from multiple options at the BossCoins.com website. Their artists finalized the artwork for me. I had them in my pocket only 2 days later. If you're thinking about a challenge coin or need to reorder your current one, please consider my friends at BossCoins.com. I'll even sweeten the deal. Send me an email, bbg@AmericanWarriorRadio.com. I will personally introduce you to one of the bosses at Boss Custom Coins who will give you a special American Warrior Radio listener discount. I love our new coins. You'll love your Boss Custom Coins too. Get started at BossCoins.com. Don't forget to shoot me an email, bbg@AmericanWarriorRadio.com, to get your special discount. We'll be right back.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
It's been called shell shock, war neurosis, and battle fatigue. Today, we call it post-traumatic stress disorder, and it affects one out of every five warriors returning from battle in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Wounded Warrior Project offers comfort and support for warriors with PTSD and all other scars of war, whether those scars are visible or hidden. Find out how to help, because for warriors, the greatest casualty is being forgotten. Please visit WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Flag season is coming up. Like me, you want to fly the best flag to show your pride. That's why our house proudly flies a flag from Allegiance Flag Supply. American flags should be made in America, and Allegiance uses only the highest quality U.S. source materials sewn right here in the USA. Order your new flag for Memorial Day, Flag Day, and 4th of July today by visiting showallegiance.com. Use discount code AmericanWarrior checkout for a 10% discount. The gold standard of flags for serious patriots. It's what we fly. Showallegiance.com.
National Guard and Reserve members need their employer's support, both on duty and in the workplace. But where can employers go when they need advice? Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, is here for you. We help businesses recruit, hire, and support service member employees. It's good for America and good for your workforce. Find your local ESGR representative at esgr.mil.
Hi, this is Craig Morgan. During this crisis, homeless veterans are alone, often sleeping on nothing more than a piece of cardboard. We need to act now. You have the power to move them from cardboard to headboard. Every dollar donated to Veterans Matters moves a homeless hero from the streets into their own home. To help, visit cardboardtoheadboard.org. They are not alone. They have you.
We're standing at attention for our veterans, first responders, teachers, doctors, and nurses. We salute you for all you do.
I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing.
KPPF, the power of community.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Jessica Donati. She's got a great book out called Eagle Down and a lot of experience in the Middle East, and particularly in Afghanistan. You can learn more. Visit jessicadonati.com. Jessica, I want to kind of get your... We've been talking 2020 hindsight now. I want to have you look a little bit forward to us. But first, just again, folks, read this book. It will inspire you and it will break your heart in many ways. One of the things when we talk about culture, Jessica, part of the reason I'd want every young person to go someplace else is just to recognize how good we have it here and just the capabilities that we have should we choose to employ them. And many of the instances in your book kind of remind me of you know, someone saying they're kind of pregnant. I mean, you either are or you aren't. And when you send our tip of the spear or any of our military into battle, you either go in to win or you don't send them. And I mean, there's ones, I can't remember where it was, but where basically they didn't even have a good map because the printers didn't work.
Right.
They didn't have batteries, so the radios didn't work. I mean, come on.
They didn't have, they didn't have vehicles. And after the coup division, they didn't really have air support either. So, this is the problem was that through that time, they were trying to fit the war into the narrative instead of crafting a policy that matched the conditions on the ground. The whole idea, so the story went in Washington, was that the Afghan army was getting better and better, and they only needed a little bit of support, and soon they would stand on their own. Whereas the reality was that they were losing more and more ground to the Taliban, and they needed more and more help. And what they gave the people on the ground did not match the mission that they needed to accomplish.
And that comes back to your example and your experience again, Jessica. The Afghan commandos, the ones that our special forces train, they were definitely up to the task. But
they were great guys.
But their commanders saw no sense in just, they weren't cattle just to be led to slaughter either.
They weren't, and they were treated like that towards the end. I can't imagine. I mean, one of the things that was in my mind throughout writing this book was the focus on the American soldiers. But when you look at what the Afghan commanders went through, I mean, that was 10 times worse, because those guys, they were smart, they were well-trained, they were elite soldiers. And yet, if they got wounded, they didn't really have any guarantee of long-term medical or healthcare support. Their families depended on them for income. So for them, going to battle wasn't just, you could get wounded and there was some guarantee. I mean, this was the survival of their families as well. They didn't get breaks. So it wasn't that they would, do a tour and then be able to go home. No, they were at war all of the time, year after year, and eventually, everyone they knew would be killed or wounded. I mean, it was a very, very difficult life that these guys led.
You know, I will say the one part of the book that made me smile and even laid out a little bit of a chuckle was your phrase, the tweet of Damocles. And folks need to buy the book and read it, but that did make me smile a little bit. So I mentioned Sebastian Junger earlier on in the program, Jessica. He's got a great book not that recently, but called Freedom, where he examines a lot of these concepts. And I was thinking about that quite a bit when reading your book and the idea of culture and how we probably should not expect great results if we go out there and try and place what we believe a family unit should be or whatever it is on other cultures. What do you, having said that, there's now 20 years, so really almost a full generation of Afghans who've experienced something closer to real freedom out from under the thumb of the Taliban. What do you see the chances of a new resistance maybe coming from the more remote provinces?
I think it's unlikely. Generally, when you would travel around Afghanistan, what most Afghans wanted more than anything else, just the average Afghan wanted peace. They didn't want to be able to tend to their farms or send their kids to school without worrying whether they would ever see them again. And sadly, the fact is that with the Taliban in control of the country, that delivers some sort of peace, even if it doesn't deliver freedom. certainly there is a new generation of Afghans who are much closer to the West in terms of their ideas, of their ambitions, particularly Afghan women. Many of them have either left or are trying to leave. And I think that's another component, that with this huge drain of people who are fairly liberal-minded, you have less people behind to try and promote that those kind of values.
Jessica, in our pre-interview, you said something that really struck me, and you clarified, look, we're just still trying to understand what happened and what is going to happen. It's a very dynamic situation right now. But you said, I don't know if there was any way to win, but there certainly were several different ways to lose. Could you expound upon that thought for us?
Yeah, I mean, the real conflict here is that that Biden ordered the military to go down to zero troops while not having a diplomatic mission that matched the capabilities that they had. So when they were basically going down to zero troops, all they have left is a little foothold at Kabul Airport, and Kabul Airport is in the middle of a heavily populated city, so it's not easy to defend or to conduct a massive evacuation from. And just at that point, they decided that they would finally deal with the backlog of SIV applications for Afghan allies that were at risk. They began to think about how they would evacuate civilians. They talked about maintaining these huge aid programs, even though the Taliban were at that point in control of most of the country. So it was very unrealistic, the way that the civilian mission was laid out versus the military mission that they had to support it, which is why when the Taliban took over and the government collapsed, they were left without any infrastructure or capacity to conduct the evacuation that they needed. And that's why most Afghans that helped the U.S. and have SIVs applications in train are left behind. That's why we saw that horrifying crash at the airport. That's why there's chaos at military bases all over the world now, where the State Department and other government agencies are now trying to figure out who it is that they did get out, because many of the Afghans that got out didn't have the documents or paperwork that they were supposed to. Maybe they are deserving of getting out, maybe they were at risk, but they are the ones that they plan to evacuate. And so this chaos, which is going to take months to unpick, if not longer, to my mind, could have been avoided.
Yeah, my money's on longer. Jessica, we're running out of time here. We've got just about a minute left. Do you still, I know one of the first things I did when I got your book is I checked in with Caleb real quick. Have you checked in with some of the soldiers in your book and their families to see how they're doing in this intriguing time?
Sure. I mean, I do. I check up on people. I try not to, you know, be too too nosy, I suppose. But I have reached out because I know it's really difficult for people who've given so much to this war to see it end like that. And I think everybody shares the same horror watching things unfold. And as you mentioned earlier, I mean, it's not over yet. We still don't know what the Taliban government's going to look like. We don't know whether other Afghans and the remaining Americans and other nationalities will be able to get out. So there's still a way to go.
Jessica, thank you so much for spending your time with our listeners today. Again, folks, the book is Eagle Down. I highly encourage you to get it and read it. You can find that at jessicadonati.com. Jessica, thanks so much and take care.
Thanks for having me.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You can find this podcast and almost 300 others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Find us on your favorite platform. We're on Apple, Google, Pandora, Spotify, iTunes, any place you look, you can find us. Please listen to these messages and share them with other folks who need to hear them. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
Listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.